thanks for joining us for the Changing the Industry podcast, where we try to effectuate change for the better, one conversation at a time. Part of that change is providing help for those that need it. This is why we've partnered with the Institute for Automotive Business Excellence. Whether it's help with sales, operations, or just getting your numbers in order, these folks are some of the very best in the industry. And for our listeners, they'll sit down with you and go over your strengths, your weaknesses, and the opportunities that are in front of you. They'll create a customized plan for how to move forward absolutely free. That's right, free. And if your plan includes one-on-one coaching, they can also help you with that. There's no hard sales pitch, no obligation, just honest help from honest people. So if that's something that you think could benefit you, make sure you click on the link in the show notes. And now, on to the show. If you're hungry, I mean, you might as well.
They right? said you'd have snacks.
I know. You got Tic Tacs and boogers. Sean Tipping?
What's happening?
How are you?
I cannot complain. Enjoying vision.
You made my day a couple weeks ago.
All right.
It was like the most awesome thing ever. You called David out and he didn't even know it. And he got his feelings hurt. He cried.
I don't get my feelings hurt very easily. I was annoyed that it was a mischaracterization of what I was trying to convey.
Although he just didn't say it properly, is what he's saying.
And did you actually listen to the podcast?
Well, maybe I should start with this.
Okay.
The thing that spurred me to make the post, and if anybody's not familiar, was I posted on your guys' Facebook page, but I was actually listening to one of the, like, at the time, the most recent episode, and it was actually Lucas that mentioned something about it that got me. And I think the reason that I posted it is I had heard that, you know, several times.
Yeah,
I listened to every episode you guys put out because I really
enjoy play with your the TikTok some more or the TikToks. The Tic Tacs more. Why don't you shake him into the microphone? Holy crap. He's trying to talk here. We're having a conversation. Is that okay?
You're the jackass that interrupted.
Jeez. This is all I can hear.
You had heard
what several times?
Yeah, so we should probably start with that. Really, to sum it up, basically, it's the concern, or I guess I'm not sure how to phrase it, but how much you care about what your employees do with their money is the easiest way to put it.
You'd heard that from who, though?
Both of you guys at different times.
Okay, yeah.
And this is over many episodes.
Yeah, we say it all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's – and I think I was grouchy that morning. So
I love it.
I try to stay off of Facebook, actually. I don't have my phone, but
I'm just offended that you're not posting every episode of the Automotive Diagnostic Podcast in the group. It's your group too. You can post in there.
Yeah. I'm really bad with social media. I have my admin guy that does most of it for me. But yeah,
can you add him to the group and ask him to post it?
Yeah, I'll get on that.
Well, when I say I was annoyed because it almost sounded like I assume nobody actually listens to the podcast, although I see the numbers and that's not true, but I just assume nobody actually listens to the podcast. So when I got like people coming at me when I said what I said, they were arguing against mischaracterizations,
okay,
straw men. And so, I just didn't engage with anybody. Like, I didn't care. It's like, hey, if you care enough about the argument that you think you're attacking me or whatever, you think I'm wrong or whatever, like, cool, back and listen to the actual argument. And then start to pick it apart, and then we can engage. But don't build something up that I can tell you unequivocally is wrong and then knock it down. I'm not saying that that's what happened with you exactly. But that had already happened like 100 other times.
Okay.
And so I just assumed when somebody goes, oh, you don't believe in raises. And then, to the point where I was I think I titled, I was trying to get Mike Allen in trouble because I had quoted Mike Allen saying, stop giving raises or something like that. That was the thumbnail for the YouTube video. And it was, quote, Mike Allen, probably. Nobody caught it. Of course, I just put those things in there to make myself laugh. But, and of course, he never said that. But that was why, like, I didn't argue with anybody on there. Like, I didn't say anything. Like, it's everybody doesn't understand. Most people, they hear it and they react viscerally, like, mm-hmm. What do you mean you're going to deny me a raise? And it's like, no. I'm not denying anybody anything that they're due. But the conversation needs to be had that after, are you familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs? Mm-hmm. So, like, after you get through those two bottom rings of the hierarchy, like, okay, the upper stuff is not money related. You see what I'm saying? Like,
they
it's
have
not
a dollar amount. I don't recall what it is. I want to say it's like $80,000. Where after that point, your happiness is not directly correlated to
what there's a rate of diminishing returns. Yeah. And that was essentially what I was trying to make the point to Matt. And it wasn't even. And that's as an employer, I've got to produce the customer. I have to then instill value in what we're doing, portray that value to the customer. The customer has to understand it, accept it, be happy with it. All that whole process, there's a lot involved. It is unbelievably difficult. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people discount that. It is really difficult to find that customer never been to you before, show them that, hey, this is what we do, and get them all built up, and then deliver on it. And then have them walk away happy. And I have to do that at ever increasing dollar amounts. Every step of the way. Why? Because you want a pair of Jordans? Make me understand what it is that you need so that I feel good about having to go out there and ask for 20% more than I did 2 years ago, 10% more than I did last year because Jordans. That's not enough for me.
Okay.
That's not enough for me. And so because I feel like I have to get my employee the Jordans or Jordan money, I've got to do all this. I've got to do this whole dog and pony show. Like, you guys are just assuming there's a money tree. I'm not saying you, but texts are just, mm-hmm. just shake the money tree and more will come out.
Sure.
I'm not pulling up in a Lambo, dude. Mm-hmm. Now, are there some shop owners that are pulling up in the Lambo? And like, Lucas and I have been telling you about Parts Tech for a while now and how it gives you access to unlimited parts and tire vendors and direct integration with over 35 shop management systems. And now they've just launched a new referral program. All you have to do is open your Parts Tech account, go to My Shop, and click on the Rewards tab. There you'll find your referral URL, which you can share via email, text message, or on your social media. If your referral signs up for a new account and places 5 orders in the first 30 days, Parts Tech will send you a $100 gift card. That's it. Nothing else is needed. Your referrals can get you $100 just for using Parts Tech, which, by the way, is absolutely free to get started with. So if you're using Parts Tech already, start sharing that referral link. And if you haven't signed up for Parts Tech yet, what are you waiting for? Click on the link in the description or go to partstech.com/podcast. That's partstech.com/podcast.
Hey, one more thing. If you find out that your shop management system doesn't integrate with Parts Tech, it's time to upgrade. David and I use what we believe to be the very best system on the market, Shopware. With unmatched features like Parts GP Optimizer and DVX, which is their digital vehicle experience, Shopware really is way more than just a shop management software. With it, you'll be able to create an immersive and interactive experience for your client, setting you apart from everyone else using run-of-the-mill software. Are you ready to upgrade? Click the link in the show notes to get started.
Look at my nice new car. Hey, do the oil change for me. I got to take off for this weekend to my vacation home. And yeah, and if you want to come after that guy and go, hey, can I get another $5 an hour? That'd be nice. Look at all this learning I did.
Yeah.
That's a conversation, and justifiably so. I can understand. But I don't operate my business that way. And I don't think I could ever get to that point. Did you, are you an ASOG?
I'm in the Facebook group. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So there's somebody had posted on there that they were afraid to friend their employees.
Yeah.
And that's not, that wasn't the cringe. The cringe came in the comment section where the guy's like, some of the comments. They were like, well, if you're afraid that they might get upset if you show off some of the nice things you have, some of the vacations you go on, and they see it, they might be jealous of your lifestyle. You may not want them to see that. What are you doing? And why?
Yeah. Now, I should start with this. I'm real small scale. I've only been full-time business owner for a couple years now.
Yeah.
And I only have two employees. So I'm real small scale. But in that small amount of time, I've tried to be transparent with my numbers and what's going on with the business with the employees that I have. Now, I realize that could definitely backfire on you in certain situations. There are certain people where maybe that caused problems. So far, it's been good to say, hey, here's the numbers. Here's what we've got to hit. And I did like an incentive bonus as far as the pay plan so that the business does well, you do well sort of situation. But they're, you know, they know what's going on. And yeah, am I making more than them? Yeah. But that's a conversation of, okay, well, here's all of the effort and risk that I put into.
Yeah, and the liability and the amount of time that you put into it before.
Liability.
Yeah.
Liability and everything.
You know, I think for me, it takes a very different angle on. And so I'm the same way. I show them the numbers. We do pay calculations. I pay them at least 30% of their revenue. And every 6 months, we're analyzing it, and I'm showing them what they generated. And so it helps them understand effective labor rate. It helps them understand proper billing and the way we're handling these things. And so I'm showing them that data. My concern comes from a couple situations I've had where I was giving an employee more money and was trying to help, right? And they were exceeding that percentage of what every single business coach out there says, this is your absolute max,
okay,
right? And I'm raising labor rates, and I give more money, and it's like, you know, I go and I'm like, how much do you actually need, right? Because this is like the third time we've had this conversation, and you're telling me you can't pay your bills and you can't get anything done. So let's talk about this, and let's raise your pay. And in the same conversations, it's things like, well, where else would I go work that I could earn as much as I earn here? Well, hold up for a minute, right? Like, let's talk about this for a second. You're telling me you couldn't earn what you earn here anywhere else, but you're telling me you're not earning enough.
It's making the argument for you.
Right? So, yeah. Like, I'm curious. And so I really, like, we're a very tight-knit group. And so people within the group were saying, like, hey, we're really concerned that this is becoming a thing, right? Like, this is mistakes that I have made in my life where the expenses creep and lifestyle gets big and all these things happen.
Yep.
And that's dangerous because unless you understand how to manage your finances, you could go into massive debt and never be able to get back out of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
And so my thing was, is I'm presenting these numbers and I'm saying, like, dude, if I give you another raise, and then it happened four times.
Okay.
Right. And each of the four times, we're back after they set their own rate. And we're back and we're saying, I can't pay my bills. I don't know how you expect me to live like this. And I'm like, dude.
No, I don't need numbers or anything, but the pay that he's getting, is that on any sort of incentive production
basis? There's incentive production base.
Okay.
There's 14 days of paid time off.
Okay.
There's paid vision and dental. There's a insurance stipend. To pay for the health insurance. There's paid training. All of their training's paid for. We're turning 20 hours a week. And it's like, at some point, I've got to say, I'm not doing you any favors.
Sure.
By doing this.
And it wasn't that. It would have been different if it was like, hey, you know, I've got two kids and my sister's kids are in a bad situation. I got to take on another two kids. Uh-huh. Now I have four children I have to feed, and my wife just got laid off for work. And what I was making before is not enough. Okay, now that's why I was talking about the hierarchy. So it's like, yeah, that's going to bump you way down the hierarchy, and now your focus is survival. I don't want you on survival mode. So let's have that conversation. Let's figure out, okay, let's get you here. Let's wherever we need to get you. Okay, it's a different situation than you're not in a survival mode. You are in a, you know what, my 32-inch widescreen gaming monitor is nice, but I really want that Samsung G9, 49-inch, ultra-wide. It's $1,500. And you know what? I can't pay for that out of pocket because I didn't save up enough money. And it's like...
But for me, I don't care what they want, right? Like, it's none of my business what they want with the money. It's my business to make sure that I'm providing them the tools to be smart with the money that they do have, right?
But then they buy the thing, but they buy it on credit. Now they have another car, another payment. And then they bought a car, too, on top of that. And then they live in a ridiculously huge house that they can't afford. And they stack and stack and stack and stack and stack. Like, did you need that gaming? Did you really need to take on that $50 a week payment that you're making on that thing? Was that really necessary?
We had a absolute blow up over a tool, right? Because y'all know that I'll buy the tools. I don't care to buy the tools, right? Especially scan tools and things like that. And we had a tech go onto the Snap-on truck and buy a new scan tool. And I'm like, we've talked about that we don't know that Snap-on is the direction that we want to go in the shop anymore. Mm-hmm. We're not happy with some of the things that they were doing with the tools at the time. And we've talked to the vice president of Diag at Snap-on, and they've really worked to make things better. But, you know, we had already talked about that we weren't going to do that. And so I go to a particular tech and I say, hey, man, like I'm walking into the shop and I can tell he feels like he's just done something wrong. You know what I mean? Mm. And so I'm walking over to talk to him. I'm like, hey, is everything okay? And he's like, no. He won't make eye contact with me, right? And so then he's like kind of trying to shoo me out of the bay. And all of a sudden I see the Snap-on dealer walk back in with a new Snap-on box, right?
Oh, boy.
And so I'm like asking him, like, how much did you pay for that? And he's like, oh, it was $3,800. I'm like, dude, why did you do that? He said, it's going to cost me way less money. And I'm like, whoa. You never spend $3,800 and it cost you less money. He's like, no. It's going to cost me way less because it's lowering my payments so much. And I said, that is not how that works. Like, let's talk about this.
Yeah.
And so we go into the office and I pull all of his numbers up. We're looking and I'm like, okay, so tell me how much you're paying for the tool. And he said, $3,800. I said, why did you choose to do this instead of ask me to buy you a tool? And he said, well, because I have a Snap-on balance and I'm trying to get my cash flow back up. So I was trying to get the Snap-on balance down. And I said, okay, well, how much was your Snap-on balance? And he said, it was $1,800. And I'm sitting here thinking, dude, I would have just given you $1,800 and we would have paid off the Snap-on balance. You'd pay me back or something, right?
Yeah.
And so I said, well, how many payments are you going to have? And he's like, well, I don't know. And I said, you don't know. I said, well, what's your interest rate? He said, well, I don't know. I said, where's the paperwork at? Was the dude supposed to show you these pages as he signs the paperwork?
Disclosure, right? Yeah.
Yep.
29.99% interest. And by the time he got done paying for it, it was going to be $17,000 and some dollars for this $3,800 tool.
Yeah.
And like, I get that we want new and nice things, but there's no flashlight on a Snap-on truck that is worth $2,000. It doesn't work like that. And we just don't think about the money that we're spending. We're not being smart about it. Now, it's not my business what they do with their money. I don't want anybody to think that because I don't feel that way.
It sounds like you're saying that.
No, it's not that. It's that if I have people in my organization that I genuinely care about and I want them to have the best life possible, and I'm so effing passionate about it because I've made that stupid mistake and I'm just now climbing out of those stupid mistakes.
So that's where I think a lot of this is that – we either have gone through it ourselves.
Yeah.
And quite often, I would imagine that you guys are talking about younger, especially younger guys in their 20s.
Not necessarily.
Okay. And sometimes not. Sometimes it takes people longer. Yeah. They haven't had that education, right? But this is something that, at least for me, I can speak for myself, is important to me. Financial well-being or stability is important to me for various reasons of growing up and not experiencing that, right? So I put a lot of effort into learning what I can. I'm far from an expert, but I can say I'm stable at least. Yeah. And it is important to me. So when you have something like that, and there's a lot of other things like that that people take on, whether it be like health or religion or even like politics or something, you're so like, wow, this is so important. I really want to share this with other people or try to explain like, this is so good. Look at this thing. That's so good. Yeah. And yeah, financial health being one of those things, you don't want to see people that you care about make those same mistakes. So you're going to, hey, here's the things, but that's where it gets tricky because, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but I can't force them to do anything. And to a point, I don't want to really know what they're doing with their, their money. You know, like there's, I want there to be a separation there. Like
I have had,
it's not even that you're not going to make those mistakes, but then you see somebody could be younger, maybe not, or whatever. You have a conversation and they may not have learned some of those financial tips and like, hey, it's not a good thing to have a huge tax return coming back. That means you've been overpaying the whole year.
Yeah.
Like that's, and you wouldn't believe how often over the last 20 plus years that I've had employees working for me that I've had to have that conversation with people in their 50s, 60s plus. Like, what do you mean? Like, you see the money coming out of your paycheck. They don't even look at their stubs half the time. It's just like, hey, how much hit my account? That's all they want to know.
Yep.
And that level of disconnect isn't healthy and won't ensure their financial stability well into their older years. Because the other factor of it is, what's this going to look like in 20 years? You see what I'm saying? Like, you're 31 now. But when you're 55 and you have busted shoulders, what's that going to look like? And so you've got to set yourself up now at 30 to be in a good place at 55 to then make different choices, because you don't want to be the Walmart greeter because you have to be the Walmart greeter. You want to be the Walmart greeter because you got nothing else to do.
Yeah.
What do you guys have for that as far as a path for a technician, somebody that's working on cars? It's different for what I'm doing right now because of, it's not extremely physical, right? We're just, we're in vans and punching buttons on computers and stuff. So, you know, if someone wanted to continue to do that into their 50s, as long as they wanted to do it, it wouldn't be too much of a physical strain. Can
you slide
strain.
This thing a little bit closer to you?
Just slide the whole thing.
The whole thing,
So, like, in our shop, we've got a 401k, and I match at 5%.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to be smart about building in for them long-term sustainability. It's hard in an independent shop to find a position for that person that they can grow into, because you only have so many positions within that facility that they can move to.
See that, but I reject that idea entirely as well. Like, I reject the whole idea of like, oh, I've got no career progression. It's not career progression, especially when you're working in a small, like you're saying, the small independent repair shop. Like, how many positions do I have? Got technician, QC guy, service advisor, maybe a shop manager, owner.
Hey everyone, it's Lucas. I'm sorry to jump in, but I thought it was important to come and say this. You know, I'm often asked, why do we always talk about Kim and Brian Walker and shop marketing pros on the show? It's because we genuinely believe in their product. Why do I use them for my own marketing? In fact, they're building me a new website right now. It's not cookie cutter. I kept getting on Facebook and every shop looked the exact same. I didn't want to be that. And it's not just that. It's that they're part of your team. When you hire them to do your marketing, they get to know you. They know what you believe. They know what you say and they know why you do what you do. And they share that with your clients. That's huge. And beyond all of that, probably the most important factor in all of this is they stand behind their work. So don't wait. Go today and get your free marketing analysis from Shop Marketing Pros. They're genuinely our friends and they're genuinely here to help shop owners have a better life. Click on the link in the show notes for your free marketing analysis today. That's right. It's free. Doesn't cost you a dime.
They can take the ownership shop. At any point, You just got to throw, you just got to sign a piece of paperwork. You can have it. Done. I'm out.
Well, how many payments?
no payments. That's it. You just got to take on the debt. Anyway, I have a negative balance sheet.
Well, so, but I guess what I'm trying to say is that in my facility, right, if something happens to somebody, they get hurt, I want to do my very best to sustain them and create something for them.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm doing with my shop is I'm trying to make sure we're providing them enough education and enough supplemental stuff right now, 401k, getting some money put back, being smart about our money, doing those kinds of things, that if they want to do something like move into education, right?
Okay.
If they want to become a high school or community college instructor where they've got hurt, they can't do what they were doing before, they can go work for the school, they provide a needed service to our industry. They know the knowledge, or they know the content, the material they need. They know the curriculum, and they're passionate about it. So now they have a pathway. Maybe it's that they move into service advisor. Maybe it's that they move into shop manager. Maybe it's that we create additional facilities and they move into that, right? I don't have the perfect laid out plan right now.
Oh, it's tough.
It is.
It's like being an athlete in a way, because – your physical ability in a lot of cases with mechanical repair is where you're making your money. And that only lasts so long. For, you know, some people can stretch it out another decade or so, but everybody's going to slow down. Your body's going to wear out. Maybe you just don't want to do that. Swing hammers anymore.
Dude, eventually.
And so, yeah, it's a tough thing for a technician mechanic that's doing repair to transition to something else. Unless, yeah, they start thinking about it earlier. I think some advantages are we have technology that's building up so incredibly fast in the car world that you have, there's going to be more avenues that you can take in the future, but that you're going to have to start studying up on that stuff now and getting up on that. Because if you just try to, oh, I'm going to be a mobile diagnostic guy at 50 and you haven't really prepared for that, that's going to be really tough.
Yeah. And as fast as the technology is changing and staying on top of it, just in the amount of time. So there's two sides to that. I've been out of the bays for probably 6 years now, right? When I'm 38, I'm 39. When I came out of the bay 6 years ago, I was getting to the point, like if I had to turn a socket up like this and try and hold the socket and like say I was trying to twist it to get a bolt loose,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't do it. I couldn't hold the socket anymore. My hand just didn't work. And my back, I'd move the wrong way and I'd hurt my back and I was not easy on my body and I'm paying for it, right? In a lot mm-hmm. of ways. In the same respect, I look into the bays now and I'm like, man, I remember doing those jobs. And I, for the life of me, I cannot remember how to do it. I can't remember how IDS works. I can't remember where to click that button, because if you don't use that knowledge, you lose it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not all of it. I still have the basis and I understand theory and operation, but it would take me forever to pick it back up.
I had to put a water pump in my van a couple of weeks ago, and I've been out of the like wrenching side of it since about 17, 18. And I was like, okay, well, my hands still kind of know what to do, but it definitely took me way longer than it would have, you know, go back 6, 7 years ago. So yeah, you got to keep using it if you want to keep up those skills.
For sure. And if we're not intentional about those pathways and provide opportunity for them to get there, they're not going to take that path on their own.
No.
Right? We have to make sure we're creating something that gives them that path. It has to be intentionally built into the shop to do it. And I don't know very many shops that have done that. And I don't know very many shops that know how to do that. You look at a Doug Grills or a Dwayne Myers, they've done a really good job of like building systems to get that employee that if they have something happen. You know, I was just looking earlier. And this is something else to think about. We were talking about technicians getting injured outside of work earlier. There was a post in ASOG just a few minutes ago that a young tech got hurt and is either going to lose the arm or never be able to use the arm again. Jeez. And he's like, what do I do? How do I help him? Like, what? And so as a business owner, the conundrum is, well, I can't afford to pay him his salary if he can't do the job.
Yeah.
But I also... And so maybe that's where injury insurance comes in. I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah, well, there should be a death and dismemberment policy. I mean, I think there's a dollar amount that comes with an arm. It's not very much, by the way.
What is it?
I don't know. It's like maybe $15,000. They'll cut you a check for $15,000 for losing an arm.
So you get $15,000.
I'll keep my arm.
Right? But if you're going to lose it, you want the money.
Yeah.
It's versus true. Zero.
Sure.
So you get, you still lose the arm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough. And we talk about seeing what it is that they do with their money or making decisions. I had a heart to heart with Terry a while back because he said, you know, I always feel like you get mad at me when I ask for time off. And it wasn't that I
got. You do get mad at him because you're a dick.
Again, for somebody that's backed into a corner, you sure are gutsy.
We just had like two podcast episodes just talking about how mean he is.
Yeah.
The only reason why he's personable, but also very mean. So everybody's like, oh, it's okay. Well, Lucas is a dick.
I can agree with Terry that I probably came off as a dick about it. And it wasn't like for me, it wasn't that I was trying to be a dick to Terry about taking time off. It's that I got to figure out how to pay those bills mm-hmm. without an employee.
Yeah.
For that time while still paying that employee.
Yeah.
It's stressful.
It is.
Right. And so like you're trying to figure out how to balance all of these pieces mm-hmm. and put all this together. And I think I don't know that many employees understand how much goes into that to make it work. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Well, I 100% do because I'm experiencing that right now. Like, we're really small, so vacation time is real tricky to work around because one guy's off. That's 50% of what we're doing, and so okay, how do we manage that? And that's all part of the growth. But yeah, it would be helpful if everyone got to experience that role of business owner for even a short period of time to feel like, hey, here's what it's like. What would you do here?
Right. I've always laughed because I've got a family full of truck drivers, and they said that before anybody got their driver's license, they should have to drive a fully loaded big truck at least for 4 or 5 miles in traffic and see what that experience is like because you will act completely differently.
Even when I was a tech and just starting out, the first shop I worked at, I had to sell my own tickets, which is a terrible way to do it, terribly inefficient. You shouldn't have to do that. It takes a lot of time. But once I got into the role where I was just tech and I had a service writer, it was much easier for me to work with them because I know what they had to deal with talking to the customer, selling the work, getting the parts, all that stuff. So at least I had an understanding of how that process worked and the struggles that they might run into rather than the guy that just like, it needs a PCM, whatever, and not really caring about what they had to deal with the customer. Yeah. Understanding someone else's role is pretty important, but that's a tough thing to do, right? Like
it is.
I can't just have my tech like, hey, run the business for a couple months.
Right. See what it's like, friend. Here's the checkbook. Yeah, I'll see
you. Right.
We've got a advisor coach, and that advisor coach meets with our service advisors and our technicians. And they talk about problems they encountered and talk about the ways that they go through things. And they even do trainings where you send an advisor and a technician to be able to learn together and grow the business together and make things better. And I'm super blessed because our advisor coach is extremely ethical. And like her husband was a technician, and they have people that work for them that were also technicians.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've thought it was so funny because my service advisor comes to me and she says, hey, I have a question. And I said, what? She said, I was just in my coaching meeting. And she said, I have a scenario to present to you. And I want to see if I was wrong or if my service advisor coach was wrong. And she said, so you've got a customer at the front counter and you're talking to that customer at the front counter. You've got a technician standing behind you waiting on you and the phone's ringing. Who do you deal with first? And I said, well, the technician. And she said, why? And I said, well, because that's the main movement of your progression through the shop, and he can't be waiting on you. So you tell the client, hey, give me just a second. I'm going to help the technician so he can get moving. That way we're efficient with your automobile while it's here. And then you come back and you deal with the client in front of you, and then you answer the phone or you return the call, whatever it is you need to do. And I think that understanding the importance of each of the roles in the shop.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, the correct answer is you always answer the phone first. Always answer the phone first.
I disagree.
I'm sorry. You always answer the phone first. That's always the order. Phone, technician, customer at the counter. That's money. That phone call costs you $13. You're not going to answer
it. With the current Google status, it costs you way more than $13.
$39. $39. for that phone call and you didn't want to answer it because you're just like, oh, I was too busy. You didn't answer it. No.
Is that because the person's already in your shop and that phone call could go elsewhere? Or what's the...
There you go.
Okay.
Yeah. The guy at the counter is there captured, okay, essentially. So and they see that you're busy. And so you ask them, like, hold on one moment. Let me get the technician moving so we're not tying up everybody's cars. But you answer the phone, even if it's just to put them on hold, but you don't. You always listen to what they need first. The, hey, thanks for calling, hold please, is not a thing, ever. That stuff drives me nuts. Anyway.
That's why I got somebody answer the phones for me, which has been an absolute lifesaver.
So did you hire somebody locally, or how did...
Yeah, he's local. He can do all of it from home, although he'll run around and drop... Like sometimes we need to get a laptop from one van to another, so he'll help out with that here and there. Yeah. But yeah, he's local and he does all the phone and the administrative work, and it's been fantastic. It was a big to do it because he's not out there directly making money, and yeah, it's tougher to quantify. But it's been awesome, and
He is out there directly making money.
Yep, it is. If you see it in the numbers.
Yeah, afterwards. That's what I was going to say. Is like, right, it's really easy to not see that.
Right.
But then when the stress goes down and the money goes up.
That's the thing, is what's the level of stress worth? And so that's gone down as well. So it's been huge for sure. So I can focus on what I'm doing.
This to me is such a cool conversation because it was, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, we were in Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you're still teaching. Mm-hmm. And you were just barely dipping your toes into the mobile thing. Like, you were doing it, but it wasn't like this big deal, right? And now the mobile thing is like a massive part of who you are and what you do.
Mm-hmm.
What was the catalyst that moved you into that, to where it's like, all right, I'm going to expand this and roll with it?
Well, I had to pick one because I was trying to do both. You just can't. I didn't have enough bandwidth to do everything, and everything was suffering because of it. So
right,
I was like, I have to pick one, because I was like, well, I'll just cut back here. I'll cut back here. And that doesn't work. That's not my personality. I want to do everything as good as I can. So, or I could have stopped doing the podcast, but I like the podcast. So
yeah.
I don't want
to. Yeah. Please don't stop doing that.
But anyway, so it was really tough decision. I could have gone either way. Great benefits with teaching, a pension, and all that stuff. The health insurance, paying for that yourself sucks. But
for sure,
it was the time in my life that I was at. It was a great time to kind of roll the dice and take more of a risk. Okay. And it was almost just like more exciting to me, honestly. Teaching was safe. Teaching was, it was challenging. It was a lot of work, but it was secure and it was safe. I could retire in that job. And, you know, after I established my courses after 5-10 years, you can kind of just tweak stuff and roll with it.
Yeah.
This is a totally different animal. You don't know what's going to happen. This could totally tank and fail. This could, you know, the mobile thing is really volatile. A big company could come into Minneapolis and push me out. You know, like all kinds of things could happen, but I don't know. That actually kind of excited me, and
for sure,
go for it. As dumb as that sounds, so that's the route that I took. But it really could have gone either way.
What do you miss the school? Do you miss teaching?
I miss parts of it. I miss the students. That's the main thing. I miss my immediate coworkers, the other instructors. I don't miss the administrative. I don't miss the culture in the college. I don't miss a lot of the behind the scenes grading. Oh my God, grading is the worst.
Yeah.
It's the absolute worst. I hated that.
Well, and I've talked to a lot of technicians who are at the end of their mechanical career, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they've talked about going into teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is always the same. I can deal with a pay cut. I cannot deal with the bureaucracy.
Yeah. I'll say this. It is way more work than you think it will be. It is 12 months of work in 9 months. And you have to be willing to accept that and understand what that is, because you're going to be, especially in your first few years, getting your courses established and getting your feet under you. It's your life for those 9 months. If you want to do it right, right?
Yeah.
If you want to slack off and just do the bare minimum, I guess you could probably figure that out. But like, if you actually want to be a good instructor for the students coming through and run a good program, like, you have to dedicate so much effort. to that. And the pay is not fantastic. Good benefits, again, that kind of help to balance that out a little bit. But you really got to be passionate about it. Otherwise, you're not going to want to put in that much work.
When I was getting the luggage off of the baggage claim when I landed here, a gentleman came up and talked to me, and he is a college instructor in Jacksonville, North Carolina. And he said, I had to put my foot down to come here. And he said, that's because our administration plainly said, you're not going to go to this because we don't see the value in it. And we don't want you going to training. We don't want you being involved in all this other stuff. You need to be here working. And he said, but this is the continuing education. Mm-hmm. This is the knowledge to be able to teach these kids something new.
Yeah.
And not teach them the same old, same old. We want to give them hope and tell them about what the industry is going to look like in 5 to 10 years and help prepare them so they can have an actual career.
Yep.
We want to go to work for them.
Yeah.
And for me to do that, I have to train at a high level. And so I want to go train at this high level. And they threatened, they wrote a letter of reprimand and they threatened to terminate him, all this stuff for going to AST Envision. And he's like, I'm paying out of my pocket. Mm. And then they take my paid time off and they use my paid time off for going here. And he's like, now I'm going to tell you, he's like, for me, it's a good trade-off, right? Like, I care about my kids. I want to teach them the best I can. And this is how I'm going to do that. But he said, what is it about a system that makes that okay?
Yeah.
That they don't even care any more than that.
I think it comes down to a lot of times, like shops, it depends on who you're working for. And there's a lot of different schools that look at it different ways. We were lucky that for at least a period of time, our dean had experience in the trades.
Yeah.
And then there was a transition around COVID to where we had a dean that had zero actual experience in the trades, but they were looking over all of the trades, and that made it real difficult to try to explain, you know, the things of value and why they're valuable and why we need to do these things or why we can't cut costs, you know, in this, because we got to go through our budget and, say this is why we're spending X amount of dollars here. And so that did make it kind of tough. And I think if you're working with the administration that doesn't have any experience, because the vocational side of things is so different than the academic side.
Yeah.
It's expensive to run the programs. Like, we had a full shop and a parts department, and that takes a lot of money because we're not bringing, we weren't doing like customer paid work. So we're not bringing in any money besides the tuition the students are paying, but like that doesn't come directly into our program. So we just have our budget and we have to go through and each, I think it's every 6 months, like justify why, you know, this cost has gone up or we need to keep this cost or whatever. And it definitely can be a struggle.
I've watched high school programs take off like wildfire, right? And around us, I'm telling you, we have one of the best CTE programs in the high school you've ever seen. Our CTE instructor for automotive just got regional teacher of the year in North Carolina, got county, regional, and is in the running for state teacher of the year.
That's awesome.
And that's like the first time that's ever happened with somebody from CTE, right? And it's because he's passionate and he's excited and he's fired up and he does this because he loves it. And I've told it before, but there's the guy who helped me with the engineering for my new shop. I go into one of the advisory council meetings. Now, you've been to advisory council meetings.
Oh, yeah.
How many times have you seen over 200 people at one?
Never.
Yeah.
Eight people.
This one has 200 plus every single time.
That's awesome. Right?
Lined up out the door.
Wow.
And so this guy comes over to me. He says, you know, my daughter's in this automotive class. And I said, really? He said, she says it's the best class she's in and the best class she's ever had the entire time she's been in school. And I said, why do you think that is? And he said, well, she came home and said, Dad, Mr. Mortensen is teaching me about life, not just about how to fix cars, but he's teaching me life skills and things that I realize are important that I would have never thought are important, right? And a lot of that is because he's passionate.
What kind of life skills is he teaching in a high school class? What?
It's actually
how to skin a chicken.
Don't do drugs.
Yeah, don't do drugs. Right. I don't remember being excited about that. So I don't do them. I thought it was so.
Wait, what if I already did?
It's really interesting because he's taken a lot of liberty with the curriculum, and so when he's teaching these kids, he's going out and he's telling them, hands on the car and work through the problem. And they come to him and they say, but Mr. Mortensen, this didn't work. And he says, okay, well, what are you going to do about it? What is the thought process that's going to get you from here to a solution? And work through that and help them, you know, and he's there for them, right? Like they're coming and they're saying, Mr. Mortensen, I have this going on in life, this problem, this thing, this. And he's like, well, how would you want this? That
sounds very nice. Yeah.
He's a fantastic human being, but you know, it works because they have a whole CTE committee that is wholly focused on making the trades better in our community. Right. And then directly on top of that, they've got a CTE director that when Mr. Mortensen says, hey, we need this, we need another instructor, we need tools, we need equipment, they say, okay, where do you want it? And then you turn around and you look at the community college system, who's fighting for every single dime they get, and it's a fight constantly, and people aren't going into the program like they should. You know, I mean, I think there's a lot going on. You may have heard me share this statistic, but there's a third of the men going into the skilled trade programs that were before. There's 70% more women going into higher education, be it community college or be it four-year schools.
Okay.
Right? And none of them are going into these skilled trade programs. And so the community college director where I'm at was saying, well, you know, what's the solution to that? And I don't know that there is a solution to that. I think we've got a tech shortage, as in techs are leaving our industry. But also think that we've got a problem where they're not coming into our industry. And I think that's the bigger deficit we're going to have to worry about.
Yeah. Not an easy question to answer for sure. I think a lot of it comes down to just the culture as a whole. And it's not as...
It may not be a thing in like 5 years. You don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
In 5 years, those now 25-year-olds are going to be like, hey, I'm going to go be a tech. So I don't see the it'll work itself out, is what I'm saying.
I agree.
The fact that some will... the demand will hit to the point where like they'll be compelled to come in because the fact that we don't have enough 17-year-olds becoming techs. Like, have you met a 17 or 18-year-old tech?
Yeah.
Most of them are terrible at it.
But if you look at the community college system, a lot of the people that go through the community college system aren't 17 and 18-year-old kids.
Yeah, I thought that was the weirdest thing my first year teaching, and I had four or five guys that were older than me. I felt so they were the best students by far.
Yeah.
But I felt so weird about it that first year, and then I kind of got used to it. But
in my tech school, it was half and half young kids. I was one of the young ones, and then older guys. The older guys were from factories that had closed down. Mm. The factory's now closed. Part of their settlement package, because it's union, is, hey, we'll pay for your education. And they get the idea that I'm going to go work on cars. The problem is, like, they think they're going to go do oil changes and wrench and stuff like that. And they've got a book in front of them learning about theory and operation on, you know, camshaft timing. And they're like, well, why do I need to learn this? Dude, like,
Yeah, the assembly line, it doesn't transfer over to
correlate. No,
for sure.
No, it was bad. You saw the split. They were failing. They could mechanically, they were inclined, so they could work on the cars. So that portion they would do okay. Mm-hmm. But you sit down, you got to take a test and regurgitate the acronyms and some of the basics. They couldn't do it.
Yep. We had lots of guys like that. Be awesome in the shop, terrible in the classroom. Yep. And we had vice versa. Awesome on paper, can't do anything in the shop. And that was where it was tough, is like, how do you grade those two people? Like, you know, who deserves the higher grade in that situation? And that was a tough one to work through.
You gave it to the test takers, right?
Well, you know.
Tells me, by the way. Every test, just nailed it. Because I could read the book. It was like, I can get the seal out, mister.
Yeah. And I'm
like, did you use the seal puller? What's a seal puller?
You know, I think that there's a lot of required ability that as we see a shift in the automotive space and the car becomes more complex and we see new technology, that we have a workforce that's going to struggle to handle that. We already have a workforce that's struggling to handle the demand that we have now, right?
I'm holding out hope for robots.
I think it's.
I know they shut down the robot AI's program. They shut down that robot program where they were changing the tires.
Oh yeah,
did you see that? Yeah. They shut it down. I'm still holding out hope. They'll get robots.
Well, I guess my thought though is that
or the AI will get good enough that it'll predict. It'll use a predictive model where it'll say, "Hey, I'm about to fail," or "This component's about to fail." Uh-huh.
You remember the Mercedes conversation with augmented reality that they were going to put glasses on their technicians?
Mm-hmm.
And they said it was really so a very, I'm not going to use the terms they did because I want to piss a bunch of people off, but they, you know, a very unskilled person could put these glasses on and the person on the other end could walk them through fixing the car.
Sure.
And show them what wire to look at and what to do and where to find it and how to find it.
I think it's a lot of things with technology where, you know, we can predict all these things that are going to happen and something big is going to happen. But
yeah.
I have a feeling it's going to be like we won't expect exactly how it transforms the industry. It'll be something where like, oh, wow, I didn't see it going that way. But yeah. Stuff is just ramping up at a crazy pace.
It is.
These 22, 23 cars are wild.
They really are.
The cars will dumb down, but they'll dumb down. But you can't take an unskilled person, put some glasses on,
and have them
swap out parts because they still need to know, like, hey, that bolt's about to break. You know how that feels. But what you can do is, hey, we're not going to give you any service information, and the scan tool will go to the mothership. Mm-hmm. And so the scan tool hooks up, goes to the mothership, you get a phone call, and it's level one tech support, and it's AI, entirely AI, by the way, because they can't use a human because they're expensive. And so they'll make them go through, and they'll be like, next, next, next. I already tried all that, next, next, next. Yep. And then they get to level two, and level two might be the guy from another country. And then when that doesn't go through, then they get to the level three. An actual engineer, and the actual engineer goes, "Huh, that shouldn't have done that. I didn't design it to do that."
Here's a software patch.
It's broken.
Yeah. Here's a software patch. This will fix this.
Yeah.
The cars are going to get dumbed down. There's been a seemingly wholesale rejection of EVs in the market. I think they overbet on EVs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now they're scaling back. You got to think for them to roll out the Lightning. The billions in R&D work and tooling.
Yeah.
And the R&D of the tooling. And do you see what I'm saying? It's like just to get to the point where now we're producing this vehicle, this thing has to hit. Mm-hmm. And so they double and triple. Look at Kia and Hyundai. What do they have, like 17 EV models out now? They're like, oh, we got an EV for every size. Little EV, medium, big, SUV. Why not? They keep rolling them out there. Meanwhile, Toyota's plugging along with... I think they did finally roll out actual EV out, like EV.
Oh, okay.
But they were doubling down on their hybrid technology because they're like, we're not going to get rid of ICE because it's not going to work out. Nobody listened. GM's out there pushing their, hey, we're going to go all EV by 2035. That's not going to work out.
No.
Turns out nobody will buy your vehicles if they're all EV.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess they interviewed me. Maybe it was yesterday morning.
Did they? Who's they?
For a thing for Apex MDG.
Oh, I was going to make fun of you. Never mind.
Yeah, you can make fun of me if you want. I'm kind of used to it at this point. And
he was in Wired Magazine. Did you know that?
Oh, cool.
Yeah. They didn't put in there what I said, but.
they didn't put in there what I said, but I was fascinated by the author of the article. They're based out of Seattle.
Okay.
Now, if you encapsulated all of Seattle into a single person in 2020, very specifically, 2020.
That's a rough time for Seattle.
If you encapsulate all of Seattle into one person in 2020, that's who interviewed Lucas Underwood. And she's like, hello, how you doing?
That's an inside joke. Yeah. You just like the rest of the internet doesn't even need. The rest of the internet doesn't even need.
I don't do these for anybody else other than make myself laugh. You understand that, right? I just I do these just to.
Well, so we're talking about it, and she asked like a series of questions, like what technology are you excited about? And I'm like, I'm a nerd, right? So I'm excited for new technology. I'm excited for EV. I'm excited for ADAS. I'm excited for AI in the technology that we use. I like really big, cool center stacks, and I love to understand how they work, right? Like, I'm a nuts and bolts kind of person. I love to see it in my head how that communicates and why it does what it does. And unfortunately, as a shop owner, I've gotten so far away from that part that I was so passionate about and I so loved. But, you know, we're talking about it, and I said, I'm really passionate about that. And I said, and I also love the fact that it's going to take a lot of shops out. And she said, huh? And I said, the reality is there's a lot of shops who have just barely been hanging on for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not trying to improve. They're not trying to get better. They're not trying to educate their technicians. They're not trying to educate themselves. They're trying to hold on to wait till somebody comes and buys the shop. And that technology is going to push them out. When those cars hit their shop, they're going to say, the hell with this. I'm not doing this anymore. And I think that the majority of our technicians who are having a hard time right now, and they're saying, I'm not being treated properly, I'm not being paid fairly, I don't have benefits, I don't have all those things, are in shops where the owner's like, dude, I'm just trying to ride this out and wait for somebody to come give me my big nest egg on this.
When we were getting ready to come here, because I brought the whole team, you know, I tried to let all the shops know with email and letting them know, like, hey, we're going to be gone these days, you know, schedule for the next week, whatever. And I told them we're going to training, and I got a lot of funny looks, like I had three heads. Yeah. Like, are you going to be gone for 3 days for training?
That's for a sure.
thing? I'm like, yeah, that's how we, like, can work on all these cars that you guys call us for.
Right, exactly. And they
can I go to this training? You could.
Yeah.
It's the whole thing. Right. You could fix the car yourself. What?
I'm telling you, they have no desire in that. Right? What do they want to do? They want to survive. And I think part of that, we say that like it's a bad thing. I go back to the story about the Volkswagen guy in my town that I asked his front counter person, like, why does he act like that? And she said he spent his entire life making everybody else's problem his problem. It's driven him crazy. Right? And I connect with that, right? Because the day in and day out, like, you get super frustrated sometimes. You dad voice your clients because they're frustrating for you, right? And you just can't stand to answer that stupid question one more time.
No, no.
Even though the same person's asked it three times. No. Hey, Dave, listen, I've noticed a little bit of an oil drip underneath my car. Well, I told you there would be oil drips. I asked them to wash it, but if you need it washed again, just bring it by. You know?
Do you talk to your children that way?
No, but...
Okay, then how's that a dad voice?
I'm just...
That sounds like a psycho. You said dad voice. You didn't say, oh, you go nuts on your customers. I don't. That's not... You know, you have kids, right?
I don't.
No?
Nope.
Well, there's a tone that you get when your kid's like, hey, it's time to go. Get your shoes on. Hey, it's time to go. Get your shoes on.
You hit that level and they just know. Like, well, okay,
you don't raise your voice. You set a tone and they're like, oh, he means business. Because the next thing that'll happen is me getting dragged out by my foot and my shoes shoved onto my feet in a very uncomfortable position. So,
but look, the only point I'm trying to make is that it can be overload sometimes. Mm-hmm. It can be heavy. As a shop owner dealing with the BS day in and day out, cars that didn't get fixed and cars that came back after they did get fixed, and a technician with a problem.
Is Titus Martin. That poor guy was trying to talk to you. You wouldn't talk to him. But here's what he would have told you. He absolutely he loves going to the shop. I was like, Corey. Loves going to the shop. They're both nuts. They're crazy. I don't know how you get to that point where you enjoy fixing the cars.
I love fixing the cars. It's the people and the.
So you can't disconnect the two.
You can't. No, you
can never. You can have your shop humming. Mm-hmm. Just everything's going to the nines, and all it takes is that like 9:30 p.m. Google review. Bling!
Star. Don't even have to know if it's a 1-star or a 5-star.
No, no.
Just stop breathing, just hearing the
notification. The notification comes in and you're like, it comes in and then it's 1-star, no comment. And you know the customer and you're like, I bent over backwards for that person. Do you know how hard we worked on that thing?
That's the dad voice.
That's not
okay.
That's not a dad voice.
I think that it has, at the end of the day, I think it has a impact on the well-being and the health of the shop owner and the shop staff. Mm-hmm. I was talking about my friend Don. Don worked for a manufacturer in a dealership and was a service manager and parts manager and was dealing with all this stuff. And he said, I was working super late hours and I was trying to make this the best dealership possible. I was trying to make sure everybody had a great experience. I was dealing with all the stress and everything that went along with the shop. Mm-hmm. And if cars didn't get fixed, as service manager, I was out there fixing them. And he said, whatever had to be done, I did it. And he said, I was standing in the shop one day, and he said it was like a lightning bolt picked me up off the ground. And he said, I woke up in the hospital and had a massive heart attack.
Oh, geez.
And he said, after that, he said, I realized that I had to have a different balance, had to have a different type of relationship with work, that this wasn't going to work anymore.
Yeah. We should do an episode on that sometime, because that's a whole nother conversation.
Heart attacks?
Work-life balance, and that it might lead to something like a heart attack.
That was, I mean, was he unhealthy?
No.
Come on.
I mean, what defines unhealthy? Not sleeping as much as you should.
Okay, there you go. Probably, you're not getting your 8 hours, or at least seven. I think it's 7 hours.
What's that? Unhealthy diet.
Unhealthy diet.
Right.
Two strikes against them.
Yep. Running extremely high stress.
High stress.
Yep. A lot in the automotive field or smoking cigarettes.
The stress, it's internalized. Stress itself isn't a bad thing, but stress in proper context with proper stress relief or mechanisms to relieve the stress. Because you can have a very stressful, high-demanding job and not cause heart attacks.
Yeah.
But if you're not sleeping, mm-hmm. you're not eating properly, you're probably not exercising.
Probably smoking.
You're smoking.
Yeah. Maybe drinking.
Probably drinking. And then you're going to blame the job?
I don't think that you blame the job. I don't think that in our line of work, we've put enough stress management in place for that. So it turns into alcohol consumption. It turns into smoking cigarettes. It turns into unhealthy coping mechanisms.
Did you see the thing about the Super Size Me guy? Are you familiar with Super Size Me?
I remember the original movie. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So the original movie, the guy who did the movie, in the movie talked about how eating this diet, or presumably eating this diet, mimicked years of heavy alcohol consumption in the way physiologically it had transformed his body. Mm-hmm. Which you shouldn't have this much on your liver. This is destroying your liver. How is this possible? This diet is so bad for you that it's destroying your liver. Turns out that it had nothing to do with his diet. He was an alcoholic. Mm. And he was an alcoholic going into the movie, had been drinking extremely heavily, and what they were discovering was the after effects of years of heavy, heavy drinking.
Okay.
That now he's shooting this movie. Everybody attributed his it was all wrong. It had nothing to do with the McDonald's. It had everything to do with his alcohol still consumption.
Shouldn't do that, though. Yeah, I know, right?
The straight McDonald's. Yeah. No, the guy that was in the movie.
Uh-huh.
Eating the Big Macs, he ate, I think, 2 Big Macs a day, every day, and it was like 20,000 Big Macs because every day he went to McDonald's, got one in the morning, got one in the afternoon, or got one in the afternoon, one in the evening. Every day he was having 2 Big Macs because he loved them so much, and that was his thing.
Okay.
And the guy was an older guy. He's still alive today, 20 years later, just hit 40,000, something like that, 40,000 Big Macs, has the record for most Big Macs consumed in history or whatever. He's fine.
Uh-huh.
The point is, it's just fat, carbs, and protein. In proper balance, it is what it is.
Right.
Yeah.
So no, don't blame the job. Blame everything else. And the job was just the cherry. Just right on top. Well, and then you have a terrible heart attack.
Find enough time to get away from work, I think, helps out a lot there as far as regulating the stress and being able to separate yourself from it, depending on how much stress it brings you. Maybe it's just an overload of...
You've got to really love... If you love what you do, though, why would you... I mean, really love what you do. Why would you want to get away from it?
Well, that's my problem. But there are other things to life. That's where it is.
If
is
you,
your family and friends are not going to enjoy if you're 100%
dedicated. Yeah, but you're like that's not the same thing. That's, I mean, I guess you can call it a balance or whatever, but it's understanding your responsibilities that if you love doing the job, that becomes your leisure. It's not that you neglect all other aspects of life. You don't obsess to the point where like, oh man, I haven't showered in a month because I love doing this job so much. You wouldn't do that, right?
Right.
Well, the same applies to your relationships with your family and friends. Friends are weird, but family at the very least. You don't neglect your relationships with your family. You want to make sure you take care of the wife and the kids and the dog. Mm-hmm. And you want to make sure you keep up the house because those are responsibilities. But then the rest of the time, like, go do what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Go do what you love.
Mm-hmm.
That could be work. It doesn't have to be, well, I only work 8 hours. I hate my job, so I need to keep it in this little box because if I let this job
I disagree.
That's because you hate your job.
I don't hate my job.
I know you say that. But you do hate your job because you wouldn't want to do it for free.
Do you hate your job?
I do it for free.
Do you hate your job?
I do it for free, Lucas. I do it for free. I bet you nobody listening to this mother effing podcast can say that. Do you go to work for free every day, Sean?
No, I don't.
There you go. I do. That's why I can say I love my job. I do it for freezies. Hope the IRS heard that too.
I love it when you get theatrical just for the IRS.
Not just for them. It's for everyone. I'm not kidding. How long did I did this for years, not extracting a mother effing dime out of the business because I couldn't. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And I was just going further and further into debt. Oh, I got to pull this money out of savings. Oh, I got to put this money on the credit card. Oh, I got to do this, just to survive. Because one day, you just got this idea, this dream. It's like out in the ether. You don't really know, but you're like, oh, I'm going to chase it. It's there. It's almost there. I'm going to get to it. I just, one more car, one more this, this. And you just do it because it's just the love of the game and the passion behind it and the idea behind it. You love the idea behind it. The actual fixing of cars, you always just hire somebody to do that. I don't want to fix any cars. But you want to be a business owner. So you go chasing after it. Does it ever stop? No. You do it literally all day long. But you don't neglect your responsibilities. Mm-hmm. There's no balance. No balance for me. That's insane. Balance. You got to work until you die. And if you don't, you just die faster. It's true.
Yeah, you got to have a purpose.
Yes.
I think that's where it comes in is it gives a lot of people purpose and hopefully it's something you enjoy doing. And I think people should at least try to seek that out as like, hey, it's a good way to look at it. Would I do this for free? Right. And there's definitely not all aspects of my job I do for free, but part of it I would. Like I'd play around solder modules and stuff.
Yeah,
even if I wasn't getting paid to do it because I find it super interesting. But there is more to life than the work part of it. And that's been my problem is because I kind of do get obsessive about it. And I'm like, oh, I'll stay up till 1 a.m. with this module. Should I have been hanging out with my girlfriend? Yeah, probably instead of that. Right. And that's kind of where I'm like, I need to balance.
Girlfriends come and go, dear. It's until you marry them that you have to worry about it.
Do you think that technicians have that same aspect? In other words, like,
not all of them.
It's your business now. Right. And so, I worry about that a little bit with some of my guys that like I can tell the ones who love coming to work and love doing what we do. The others, I don't think that they see the vision of what it could be or what they could have or who they could
Some people, it's just a job. They just want a paycheck. And that's it. And that's fine as long as they're doing their job. But yeah, I think everybody at some point in their life should kind of seek out, or at least ask themselves, like, can I find something that I actually do enjoy doing?
Yeah.
To a point, right? It's going to be stressful. And actually, that's probably a good thing to a point. Like, you should be challenged by something you're really not going to be interested in. It. If it's not at all challenging, you're probably not going to be into it that much for very long. You're going to get bored.
I don't, I absolutely reject the idea that I'm going to go do something for 8 to 10 hours a day just so I can then pay for, you know, who got up really upset at the whole I don't give out raise thing idea, right? Even though it was wrong, that there was this rando tech who just absolutely I clicked on his profile and it was just him either fishing or on an ATV. And he had toys. It was the reason he went to work as a technician so he could buy the toys. Because all he wanted to do was fish and ride his ATV. Okay, like, why are you working on cars? Like, why are you working on cars? Go do something with the ATVs and the fishing. Like, figure something. It's not hard. At the very least, I get annoyed. At the very least, like, I mean, what did we end up doing? What did you do? You created a podcast.
Yeah.
For free.
Yep.
It was a labor of love, right?
Yep. Enjoyed doing it.
Yep.
You just wanted to get on and talk about some of the stuff that was going on. That was it. That was it.
Yep.
Like, talk about ATVs and fishing. Turn it into something. Maybe it turns into something. Maybe it doesn't. Put it on YouTube. Who knows? Maybe you'll find an audience. Maybe it doesn't even turn into anything like that. Maybe you're just selling accessories. Maybe you go open a shop. Maybe you go work for a shop that sells the stupid things all day long. You could just sit there and talk to other people who love ATVs about ATVs. There's 1,000 different directions that guy could go. Why not do that? And love the fact that you get to do this ATV thing every single day rather than, oh, man, don't deny me my raise because I got to buy another ATV because that's what my passion is. Then why are you working on the cars? That doesn't make any sense to me. That's absurd. Why? I'm not 8 to 10 hours a day of your life every day on something you hate. Why?
Yeah, that would be miserable.
Yep.
That would suck.
That would suck for sure.
With the idea that one day I'm going to be able to retire and do what? You know what happens to people who stop working when they retire?
They die.
They die. Mm-hmm. That's what happens to all of them. I've never seen it not happen. Oh, I haven't worked in 45 years. No, no, no. No, you quit your first job 45 years ago and then got a second and then a third and then a fourth. You've been working nonstop. Everybody that lives into their 80s and 90s or whatever, they had something, some purpose behind them. Even if it was raising their family. I've been raising my grandkids and my great-grandkids because I'm around them. Whatever. It happens. They had some purpose. The minute you retire and you're like, I got all this pile of money and I've been working really hard, but now I'm 65 and I retired and I'm just going to enjoy my life. I hate when people tell me, oh, it's like, oh, I'm going to retire next year. Oh, what are you going to do? I'm just going to enjoy my time. It's like, okay, well, it's been nice knowing you. Enjoy being dead in a couple of years. They all die, dude. They all die. Right?
They do. You're not wrong.
Yeah. I think there's a barrier of work that would be there for somebody who wants to get into fishing ATV, right? Like, especially if it's something where a lot of people enjoy it or maybe a lot of people are doing something, you'd have to really work to figure out a way, like, how can I make this lucrative or something that I can make a paycheck? And some things are going to be easier than others, but I think that's what stops a lot of people is, like,
if you didn't have your ATV payments, and all you did was, like, ATV stuff all day long.
Sure.
Would you not do it for, like, half of what you're making now? You see what I'm saying? Like, you're making $50 an hour. Like, I'd do it for $15 an hour. If I could just play with ATVs all day long, it's like, okay, then go do that then. And you'll love getting up to go to work every single day, even though you're making nothing. The fact that you're complaining that I haven't given you a raise is because you hate your job, because really what you want to do is go do something stupid. Go enjoy your stupid thing. It's stupid to me. Trust me, I've got stupid habits.
Yeah, I was going to say, what stupid thing do you want to do?
Oh, you don't even want to know.
What's that? What I like to do is valid and wonderful. So everybody else's hobbies.
There's that meme of Homer Simpson. Everyone's stupid but me.
Well, sure wasn't David. He has been looking a little yellow this week.
That's a great episode.
'90s Simpsons are the
was
best.
The best.
Yep.
For sure.
Anyway.
I don't know how much time you guys got. I do want to say I listened to every episode, and the reason I posted anything was because, like, normally I don't get into the Facebook groups. I don't get into, like, comments with people. It's largely a waste of time, in my opinion. I mean, there's been great stuff from Facebook groups, but I don't get into it. And the reason I did make that post is because, you know, you guys are doing a really cool thing with the podcast, and you got a lot of ears, and you're leaders in your space, which I think is really cool. And I think that's part of why I'm like, oh, I got to say something. And I was,
in the morning. So we like really enjoy going back and forth with you and talking about the things that we always talk about, right? That's like super cool to us because you have the other side of that perspective and your listeners have the other side of that perspective. Mm-hmm. And that's important. And that's why I'm always telling you, like, hey, that's your group too. You post in there. When you have a new episode, please go in there and drop it so people know that it's coming out, because we want our people to know that this awesome content's out there.
I guarantee you everybody listens to our podcast. Oh, yeah. Listens to this.
Yeah. And I mean, we recommend it all the time. We're always talking about it. And so the thing
he
is,
listens
is
to
like,
every podcast. He knows that's a lie, right? he just told us he listens to every single podcast. He's like, I think you guys have mentioned me three, maybe four times.
But the point I'm trying to make, though, is that those conversations and you saying that and us having a dialogue back and forth is where changing the industry happens, right?
Yeah, having two people actually talk with each other instead of just one person complaining. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's what we have to start doing, is we have to start changing this narrative that is our industry, right? And we have to open the eyes of those who are listening, because if we want things to move forward and progress, it can't be that. And that's been a frustration for me, because a lot of the technicians are saying, if you knew how much money I had to have in tools, and if you knew how much of this and how much of that, and I'm not making enough money, right? Well, first of all, how much do you – they're saying they need $200,000 in tools.
That's absurd.
Me and you know, we all know that you really don't need $200,000 worth of tools to do that job for the most part, right? I probably had, as the shop owner, shop equipment and everything, I probably had $150,000 worth of tools. And at that time, me doing the work, there was nothing that I could
do. What they didn't say is that I need $150,000. Most of it, 90%, I'm never going to use more than once.
Yeah.
And it's got to sit in a $50,000 toolbox.
Yep.
And it's so I can show it off.
Oh, that's right. And on Facebook. I bought socks and I bought flashlights and I bought
jerky.
Beef jerky, and I bought all this super overpriced stuff that, because I get a total from Snap-on, and Snap-on says that I spent hundreds of thousands of dollars. How much of that was actually needed tooling versus random stuff you bought? You bought a $200 jacket. Right. And it was easy because you could finance it and you just put it on the account.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's that we need to break down a little bit. I think the other thing that we need to break down a little bit.
So you're blaming Chris Enright for all this?
Right. I'm blaming Chris Enright. That little. Here's the other thing, though. And David and I talked about this last night. I had an experience where a technician came to me. And he explained how bad things were for him and that he was very, very talented. He was easily one of the top A technicians in his particular brand, had been all over the country, done really great things, extraordinarily smart, really top-notch guy. And I made some telephone calls because this guy was talking about how he was so poorly paid. And so we found him a position. And 6 months later, the location he went to work for called and said, hey, just want to let you know, we're letting this fella go. And this situation is that we couldn't even do brake jobs and get them right. It was always a problem. And he's very dramatic. He's very up and down and back and forth. He's not a very good technician. And he definitely can't do any diag work. And so I thought, well, maybe this shop and him just didn't jive, mm-hmm. but I'm not going to help him find another one, right? And so this guy goes to another shop, makes it 2 weeks. He's terminated. Goes to another shop, makes it maybe 4 or 5 weeks, and is terminated. And each one of these is a situation where it's their problem, not his. And mm-hmm. it's unfair, and it's toxic, and it's all of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now this person's moved to another shop. I have a bunch of mutual friends, and those mutual friends are saying, every time I turn around, this person reaches out to me and says, how do I do this super basic thing? You're supposed to be an expert in this field, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying this to be disparaging. I love this person to death. They're a fantastic human being. But the point is that in their head, they're saying, I'm a $150,000 a year tech. I'm an A tech. I'm elite. I'm the best of the best.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody else sees that.
Yeah. Oh, everybody could use a little self-reflection.
Yes.
At all the way around, shop owners, techs, most people.
Mm-hmm. And, for sure.
It would do, I think, everybody a lot of good just to like really sit down and, you know, ask those questions of like,
yeah,
am I really these things that I think I am? Where could I improve? Where am I wrong? And, yes. and like, be honest with yourself. It's tough though. Mm-hmm. I get it. Like, it's not an easy thing to do, but I think you get a lot of benefit out of it if you take it seriously.
Your willingness to tell yourself the truth is the most powerful thing you'll ever find, right? Your willingness to say.
What about the whole fake it till you make it thing, kind of thing?
It doesn't work. And not
the,
in this field.
The rejection of imposter syndrome.
That's a tough one, right? That is
now you're talking out of both sides of your mouth.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's exceptionally tough because
you can go too far with it. Be too yeah. hard on yourself for sure.
Yeah.
But that it's like that's the opposite end. Like you have somebody who's overconfident, like way like yeah. just super
that's not about that's everything. Not overly confident. I think over being confident's great. Delusional, however.
right.
You look at my mom, right? My mom is one of the best cooks you could ever imagine. And every time when you go to her house for Christmas or Thanksgiving, she said, oh, I just didn't do a good job on this. It's too salty or it's not salty enough or it's this or it's that. She always questions everything she does and she does it publicly. And like to the point that my wife points out, she's like, you cannot do that. Like, I'm not okay with you doing that. You need to stop. Just if it's not what you want it to be, acknowledge to yourself that it's not, but don't publicly call out that you're not 100% happy with it. And then you see the exact opposite.
You do that as a coping mechanism. I mean, I do that too. Like you make something and you're like, I wasn't quite right. And you're like, yeah, well, it's a little low on the salt, but it should be okay.
Yeah, my mom's not like that. My mom's like every single thing she makes, she's just not happy with it. That imposter syndrome. When the meal is fantastic, right? Mm. It's absolutely delicious. I guess what I'm trying to say is that there's both sides of that spectrum and you have to be willing to really, truly ask yourself the hard questions and really truly analyze yourself.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a technician and you're demanding, you're saying, I'm an A technician, I deserve $150,000 a year. I don't think things like calling to ask somebody about how that works or see how that works. But if every car you come to, you can't fix, maybe we need to be thinking about, am I a $150,000 a year technician? If I can't do a damn brake job.
Maybe you just got a $150,000 network of people you can call. That just makes you worth $150,000 a year. I can never not fix a car because I got somebody I can always call.
I know. I call Sean Tipping every time.
Does he really call you?
I haven't gotten a fixed call from Lucas. So.
Yeah. I'll call him and say, what's up? Invite him to dinner. Did you know that until we went to dinner, I don't think Sean Tipping had ever had a steak cooked in a restaurant. Isn't that what you told me? Didn't you tell
not
me?
Not a restaurant like that.
Oh, okay.
Like, an Applebee's, sure. that was a little up the scale.
Yeah, but
I've actually been back there to that one. I brought my team there for Christmas. Yeah,
really?
So, holy moly, yeah, you're living high on the hog over here.
Man,
damn,
that was
dude.
Good. That was
good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
What was the name of the restaurant?
801.
Yep.
801, there's an 801 around the corner.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay, yeah. Excellent.
Yep, absolutely. Where did we went to Stock Hill last night. That was the real deal.
Okay.
It wasn't that good. I was a little disappointed. I really was.
It wasn't Mine was good. Delicious.
You had a sour face the whole time.
It's because I was sitting across from this jackass.
Well, you didn't have that same face at the other restaurants. I saw you at lunch. He ordered fries with like pulled pork and barbecue sauce on top. It's from this place. It's good food. That kid, when he went all fat kid on this thing, he was like, just stuff flying everywhere. I saw legs sticking up at one point. He was going to town, and then he sits back and he's like, oh man, I'm full. That is not the face that you made at Stock Hill. That was expensive. It wasn't that the food, the steak was good.
Yeah.
The steak was on. How was your ribeye?
It was good. Fantastic. Yeah.
Had a filet. It was on point. The filet was perfectly cooked, perfectly seasoned. It was awesome. The mashed potatoes were disappointing.
Yeah, the mashed potatoes were a little disappointing. The fries were good.
My fries, though, they were okay.
We went to Joe's good. The other night, and that was it's all right. Wasn't blown away by it.
What did you order?
I got it's a 2-meat plate, brisket and pulled pork.
So. Okay. Not a rib guy?
I just didn't get ribs. I like ribs.
I think what they're known for is the ribs, right?
They have the best ribs in the city.
Okay. All right.
They have the best ribs in Kansas City and therefore the best ribs in the world. Sorry. Just the way it goes.
Yeah, but you don't get pulled pork in Kansas City.
Hold on. There's nothing wrong with the pulled pork was good.
It was good. Yeah.
What were you?
You should probably come to North Carolina to eat pulled pork.
I didn't know what to expect. I don't think we'd been to that one before. The portion size wasn't the greatest, and I didn't think the brisket was, like, it didn't knock my socks off. It was good. I ate it. I didn't have a problem with it. But when I come here, everybody talks about the barbecue, so I'm like.
Texas has got brisket down pat. If you want brisket, you go to Texas.
No.
John Firm. Buck and Buckaroo Bob.
The brisket here is a little different than Texas brisket, I will say.
Oh, it's cooked a little. Texas, so.
Really?
Yeah, never been there.
The ribs at Joe's are absolutely phenomenal.
They are really good. They are really good.
The pulled pork, I honestly never get the pulled pork.
Okay.
Or the
it's
or
because
the
Kansas City pulled pork really sucks compared to North Carolina.
No. There ain't nothing good in North Carolina. Get out of here. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. You should
I don't know where we're going tonight.
You should go back to Joe's. I'm just insulted for Joe's, even though what did you have as a side?
The dirty rice. That was actually really good.
The dirty rice is good. That mac was, and cheese that was is. Tasty. Have you had their? You didn't get their mac and cheese. Nobody got their mac and cheese one.
No.
They underplay their mac and cheese. Mac and cheese is phenomenal.
Okay.
It's a phenomenal mac and cheese. Yeah, the ribs would have been what I would have told everybody to get.
Okay.
Unless they were like not rib people. Because some people are like, oh, I don't like the fat and the crunchy bits of the ribs or whatever. That's like, yeah, stuff. That's good stuff, right? Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Okay, well then, yeah, you would have liked the ribs. The ribs are just always on point there.
Okay.
And the mac and cheese, and their spicy slaw is good. They have a bunch of good stuff there.
They do.
Have you had any other barbecue here?
Not this year. I went to Q39 the last time I was here. I'm trying to think. I'm sure I've been to another place in the times I've been to Vision, but those are the ones I remember.
Mm. Okay.
But I remember Q39 being pretty good.
Yeah. Okay. It's decent.
Yeah.
I think they've got the best pulled pork out here of all of their.
Remember the pulled pork there?
Yeah. I think that's the only pulled pork.
Pulled pork is like the most basic of barbecue meats.
It's good though.
Anyway, okay. Thank you for listening to the Changing the Industry podcast. If you enjoyed the show, do us a favor and leave us a review on your favorite podcast player. And don't forget to set it to automatically download the latest episode. Our efforts with this podcast, the YouTube channel, and the Facebook group wouldn't be possible without the support of our awesome sponsors. So please take a moment, check them out by clicking on the links in the show notes.